Today, from the Wings Archive, a story about money.
You know, for years we've been talking of closing the gap between the rich and the poor. I mean, that's only talk as long as we don't look at what money does and how it works and create a better system. Because it's a totally artificial system which we have created and which we can change.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Money has three functions. It's a measure of value, a store of wealth, and a medium of exchange. It's money's function as a medium of exchange, a replacement for barter, that makes it one of humankind's most ingenious inventions. So says Dr. Margaret Kennedy, author of the book Interest and Inflation Free Money. But this medium of exchange has a flaw, the use of interest as a means of getting it to circulate. In November of 2001, Dr. Kennedy spoke with Wings executive producer Frieda Worden about complementary currencies, new systems of interest-free regional money that hold the promise of inflation-free economic growth.
I look at money as a structural phenomenon that at the moment is based on an unsustainable mechanism, which is interest, to guarantee its circulation. Unsustainable because it causes exponential growth, because with interest and compound interest, money doubles in regular intervals. At 1% in 72 years, at 3% in 24 years, at 12% in 6 years. So the higher the interest, obviously, the faster the growth rate.
Now, in your lecture last night, you gave an example of Joseph, who invested one penny at the moment of his son or stepson Jesus' birth, and what happened to that money from then till now.
Yes, that's just to show that it can't work in the long run. At 5% interest, which was paid throughout history on the average, this one penny would have resulted in money enough to buy, in the year 1990, 134 billion balls of gold of the weight of the earth at the price of gold in 1990.
Surely people have been investing for, if not that long, a really long period of time. What has happened to the people who invested their money and it doubled and it doubled and it doubled?
The point is that there are only always a few people who profit from the system, and the large majority pays, although they don't understand how they pay. Because what most people don't understand is that they pay a share of interest in every price they pay. Because the people who produce the product have to put the price of money, which is interest, which they pay to the bank, into the price for which they sell the product. This is a very differentiated share. For instance, in garbage collection, it's 12%. In drinking water, if we check what is in the price in terms of building costs, maintenance, and so on, the interest in drinking water would amount to about 38%. And in public housing in Germany, we've worked it out that over 100 years, if you pay the rent over 100 years, it's 77% interest. Okay, the next thing is that you could say, okay, everybody pays a little interest in the prices, everybody gets some if they put their money in the bank. And again, this is wrong, because if you look at the German population in 10 equal parts, 80% pay more interest than they get. The ninth part, it's about the same. I mean, they get a little more than they pay. And the tenth part gets of the population gets all that added on to their income from interest, which the eight first parts pay more. What has happened throughout history, which was the original question, is that basically this happened again and again. And it was coupled, obviously, with power, with political power in the hands of ever fewer people. And in the United States, for instance, today, 1% of the population owns more monetary wealth than the lower 95% together.
Let's restate that, because you said 1% and 95%, that leaves like 4% unaccounted for.
That's 4% that they don't belong to the poor 95%, and they don't belong really to the last 1%.
But that, what you might call the middle class, is a shrinking group?
Absolutely. I mean, there are many very unpleasant results of this. And one of the most unpleasant is the polarization of society, that there are more and more poor people and more rich people. And this is the same all over the world.
What happens when interest builds to the point that the society becomes totally polarized?
There were three ways in which this was resolved. One was an economic crash, suddenly like the Black Friday. All this big money would sort of be worth almost nothing suddenly. The next was a social revolution, like the French Revolution, the Russian, the Chinese Revolution, where a few heads of the rich were chopped off. The large majority was happy to assume a little more power. And within one or two generations, because the money system wasn't changed, the same thing was there all over again. And the third proven way of dealing with this problem in the money system is war. So, if you have a war, what happens is that everything goes back to zero and the whole thing can start all over again. Large amounts of capital that has built up is first of all put into arms, then the arms are being destroyed in the war, and then some people obviously gain from this, other people pay with their lives or with their fortunes. Usually you have a total inflation, like in Germany, we have created a new money system after the war that basically started from point zero. And this will happen in the United States too. I think what I have heard at present, the way the war is going to be financed is out of the old age pensions, out of the pension fund. You need somewhere to get the money to build the bombs because there is nothing productive coming out of this war. So this is a proven way to just destroy large fortunes. And then after the war, you probably will have also a lot of inflations. Inflation is created by the banks or the government that gets the money printed in just printing more money than is actually justified by the economic growth in the economy. And we have all the means today to have an absolutely stable money. We have all the statistics which would prove to us this is the amount of money that should be created in order to keep an absolutely stable money. But we're not using these tools because creating inflation is like a tax in a way. There's more money is being printed, and that helps the government to get out of the gap between its interest payments, because the government is the largest borrower in the market, and the not as fast rising income of the government.
So all the graphs that you have and the analysis that you have goes to show that the system of interest, I mean, even something like 5% interest is totally unsustainable over the long run, that it distorts the economy and it pushes the government into things like printing too much money. And then all that money is floating around making mischief, isn't it?
Yes. And let's put it this way. In this money system, with the exponential growth, nothing ecological is able to compete. So we have a saying in Germany that trees don't grow into heaven, with which we want to say that almost everything will stop eventually. This means that people don't understand exponential growth because it is the cancer growth. And basically, it only stops the cancer if it's left. It only stops at a point when the guest organism on which it grows is destroyed, and then the cancer also dies. But what I want to say is that if the growth of a tree cannot compete with the money-making power of money in the money market, we shouldn't be surprised if we have fewer and fewer trees and we have more and more money that floats around the world and creates mischief wherever it goes. If you inherit a forest, at the moment it pays you to cut the forest, put the money in the bank and let it accrue interest. That is more economical in our system than if you plant a forest. Because the forest only grows with a natural growth curve, which has a limit to it, while the money grows in an unlimited exponential fashion until it breaks down.
Now, what is the function of money anyway? What's the basic function of money?
It is one of the most ingenious inventions of mankind. Many people have analyzed the results of the present money system and come to the conclusion, therefore, we must abolish money. Well, I don't agree with this. I think money is a really ingenious invention because, for me, it is the basis of the specialization so that everybody can do what they're best at. And this is the basis of all civilization. And therefore, we should not abolish the money system. We need to correct a small mistake. And that is, instead of interest as a circulation mechanism, that is, if you don't get interest, you don't put your money into circulation. You have to get a reward for doing that, for parting with your money. You pay a small fee if you don't part from your money. That sounds at first exactly the same. So what is the difference? You know, in the interest system, somebody pays the interest, and in the circulation fee system, somebody also pays a fee for not putting money back into circulation. But it is an absolutely unbelievable difference. And that can best be shown in a small example. I have suggested this money system, for instance, for the city of Cali. And basically...
You mean Cali in Colombia?
Cali, Colombia, yeah, because the people there really understand why interest is destructive, because they have interest payments of 36% for housing loans. So which means that after 4 or 5 years, the banks have the houses back because people can't pay the interest anymore. And banks go bankrupt because they're not set up to be real estate agents and handle this amount of real estate that's suddenly in their lap. So people really there, everybody understands that interest is absolutely destructive because it has come to a point where it's so unsustainable that it's evident to everybody. So what I have suggested is that they now get 11 to 12%, 11.5%, let's say 12% interest in the bank if they put their money in the bank. They don't get anything on cash. So all we have to do is we have to bring this system under zero. That means if you put your money in the bank, you don't get any interest, but you also don't lose, because the bank can give it to other people to use. But if you keep your money in your pocket, you have to pay 12%, a fee of 12% per year. Now, that means 1% per month. Now, if you look at what people earn in Cali, on the average $6,000 a year, $6,500 a month. And if you look at what they pay in interest at the moment, which is hidden in all the prices, as we said earlier, and on the average in Germany adds up to 50%. I think in Cali it's more 60 or 70%. But let's just take 50% interest in all the prices. Then of the $6,000 they get per year, $3,000 is interest. But they don't understand it. Most people don't see this. But if you look at it, and you can explain it to them, and they will immediately agree that this is so. So then, if you look at what they would pay in the circulation fee system, 1% per month or 12% per year on the cash. And how this could be done, there are many, many other ways to do it. The most simple way is to create a banknote in which you have to put a stamp of 1% per month, which you buy in the bank, either the shop who gets the money or the person who has the money in their pocket. Now, imagine you would have like $50 in your pocket as a conservative figure. You just went to the bank, you want to buy something. It's the end of the month, you have to put a stamp on it. On the average, you have $50 in your pocket. 12% of $50 over the year would be, 12% is $6. So that, in fact, would be the circulation fee, only to remind people that they shouldn't keep the money in their pocket, they should pass it on.
Dr. Margaret Kennedy, author of the book Interest and Inflation Free Money. Dr. Kennedy spoke with Wings executive producer Frieda Worden about complementary currencies, new systems of interest-free regional money that hold the promise of inflation-free economic growth.
You're saying that the purpose of money is to circulate,
exactly.
That it should be set up so that money does circulate and it's not hoarded.
Exactly.
But, okay, in our society, we're all thinking we have to save our money, we have to collect interest on it or invest it in some way that will make a whole lot of money really fast, because if not, we're all going to starve in our old age. What will happen to everybody if we switched over to the system?
Well, this is why we have to create a savings possibility where people don't lose money. So if you have more money than you need for your daily needs, you put it in the bank account and there it stays stable. You have to really create a stable money. And all it means is that you cannot produce more money than is justified by the economic growth in the system. Basically, you create enough banknotes to handle all the exchanges necessary. And when there is enough, you don't create any more. And if you have too much, you put it on an account in which it can stay until it is needed again.
You mentioned that this type of money system that you're discussing, where a fee is paid for keeping the money instead of receiving interest on investing the money, that this system had actually been put into use in a number of places. And one of them you mentioned was Wörgl?
In Wörgl, this is a small town in Austria. 1932, they had great problems with unemployment. People were actually sleeping in the streets, which is not very comfortable in Austria, I can tell you. And the mayor had read a book by a German merchant called Silvia Gesell, who had discovered that there was this problem with interest and had developed the idea of the circulation fee. And the mayor proposed to the town council to introduce this money as a measure to create employment and to have a money that would circulate very fast and create wealth and employment and improve the ecological situation of the city. They improved their sewage system, they built a bridge, they built a ski jump. And Wörgl is an inspiration to all the people who know about this up to this day. First of all, the town, it was 5,000-6,000 people who lived there. They decided to create 32,000 shillings, work certificates they called them. And these had 12 fields on each note, which they printed, to put these stamps on, 1% per month. They created employment opportunities. People worked on these various public works projects. And since nobody wanted to pay that fee, the money circulated very fast. Obviously, you used that money before you used the shilling, which also was kept in existence and used. But wherever you could pay with the money, whatever you had, you paid it. People even paid their taxes in advance to not have to pay the 1% per month. So within 1 year, this money circulated 460 times, creating a worth of several million shillings in goods and services with a tiny fee because of the 32,000 shillings, 12%, that's only 3,800 shillings. And that fee then went back to the town council or the town government who produced the money and not to the single individuals like in the interest system that can put their money in investment to be borrowed by the people. So basically what happened was that unemployment went down by 25% within 1 year. The taxes increased by 35% and the public works projects, they increased by 220%. And if that could happen in Cali, for instance, we are suggesting that they would create something like a million Calipas, which is their, would be their currency, that could be used in the region of Cali for all the products and services that can be produced in the region. Obviously, if you get cars from Hong Kong, you can't pay them with Calipas. It's a regional money. And if that would be circulating 400 times, roughly, then they would create goods and services worth $400 million within 1 year at a fee of $120,000 would be the fee that the city, that the government in Cali would get as a fee, and they could use that to decrease the tax load, for instance, on people. The merchants could pay their taxes with Calipas. The government could pay their employees with a share of Calipas, let's say 10 to 20%, which would be better than what they have now because government employees haven't been paid for months. And so it basically would create this exchange, which is this absolutely ingenious invention of mankind. We would finally have a money system that would be sustainable, where you could finance public services, where you could finance education, health, culture. It would do all the things the present money system is very bad at doing, because none of these services is competitive with the exponential growth or the money-making power of money in the money market. This is why we're cutting health services, we're cutting education, we're cutting cultural budgets. Theaters all over the world are in problems. Orchestras have problems. And with this new money system, this all could be financed much easier.
What do you call this type of money?
I call this money complementary currencies. And there are many different ways of creating them. You can create local exchange trading systems, which are basically systems of accounts where people who offer something as a service get a credit and the person who gets the service gets it debited to its account. And so the money is created basically at the moment where the exchange takes place. That is the most simple. That can be done everywhere because you cannot prohibit the keeping of accounts between people. So this is the most simple form of creating a complementary currency. And there are all kinds. There is the Ithaca hour. There you have the hour of work being the basic unit of the complementary currency. In Japan, you have a huge system. The Japanese could not deal with their aging problem anymore. So they created a national central agency where if you give an hour of service to elderly people, this is credited to your account, and you can either use it for your parents living in another part of the country, or you can use it for yourself when you're getting older. And what it turns out that the people in Japan, the elderly people, actually, if they have a choice of using that service or using a professional geriatric clinic or whatever, they always choose the voluntary service because it is obviously much more heart in it, much more feeling. You know, people really love these young people coming and helping them. So there's a whole new money in existence which is based on the hour of work, which never depreciates. So since the beginning of the 80s and now, we have exponential growth in these complementary currency systems. There were one or two in the 80s in Canada and Vancouver Island. They started the first LED systems. And now we have over 2,000 systems in France, in Germany, in Austria, in America, in New Zealand, everywhere in the world they're being created. And these are only the ones we know of. And we really believe that there are many more, maybe double the amount. But we have the record of over 2,000 right now. But in France, the central bank presidents got really scared. And he said, we will allow 200 of these systems and we will not allow them to network among themselves so that they cannot exchange beyond their own system, their own region. And in New Zealand, there is a law that the central bank president gets fired when inflation goes beyond 2.5%. So what happens is the central bank president there supports these systems to come into existence because basically they are the cheapest way to create employment programs, work creation programs. You know, you allow people to, and you help them to create their own local money systems, and suddenly they have a means of exchange to do various things like from babysitting to helping to write love letters. That was one item. But what happens is these systems create a need for information. In other words, here, you know, you go into a supermarket and you get everything you want. But if you want to work in this system, you have to look at your list, who is actually providing, let's say, the organic vegetables you want to buy. Then you have to call them up or you have to make an arrangement when to meet, what the price will be and how it gets transferred. So it's these new money systems being small take more time, and time is money, as we know. So they're not really an alternative to the normal money system we have now. And therefore, I think I would rather concentrate on creating a money system based on demurrage, or which is a circulation fee. That's the economic expression for the circulation fee. Because that could then grow to the extent necessary and could be used in every shop like the normal money system, and it would not create the same need for information and the bit cumbersome exchange that now exists with most of the complementary currency systems.
The value is not in the money.
No.
This is the fundamental mistake that we're all making. We're all saying we want our money to work for us. The value is in the money. The money is constantly losing value through the hidden taxes of inflation anyway. Yes. So, I mean, and the tax goes not to the government, but to whoever owns the money.
Can I tell the story about the lady who came into the hotel? I use this story to show what money does. You know, there's this young lady who comes into a small town in America one morning, goes to a hotel and asks the owner if they have a room for her. And they say, yes, $100. So she gives them the $100 note and says, I'm going to leave to look at the town. I'll be back in the afternoon. At this moment, the baker who has just delivered the bread comes in and tells the hotel owner that there's a bill of about $100 for the last 2 weeks for the bread. So the hotel owner gives it to the baker, the $100 note. He takes it home. And there his wife asks him if she can go out now and buy the dress that they had agreed that she could buy. So he gives her the $100 notes for the dress. She goes to the dressmaker, buys the dress. The dressmaker takes the $100 notes to buy some more cloth. The clothmaker goes to the car retailer and gets his car repaired and gives him the $100 for the repair. And the car dealer in the end pays a traveling salesman for a couple of handies with $100 notes. So the traveling salesman comes to this hotel at late afternoon and asks the hotel owner if he has a room. The hotel owner looks at his books and says, no, he's fully booked, terribly sorry, he can't give him a room. At this moment, this young lady comes in who came in the morning, and she's totally worried because she has got a call from her husband that she has to go home the same night. And she asked the hotel owner if he could be so kind as to cancel her room that she had been booking and she could get the money back. In this moment, this traveling salesman there says, oh, this is wonderful, then I can have your room. And the hotel owner cannot but take the $100 from the traveling salesman and give it back to the young lady who gave him the $100 in the morning. Now, at this moment, this young lady takes the $100 notes, goes across to a table where a candle is burning, and burns the $100 note and says, well, maybe it's better I get out of town anyway because this was a forged note. So what this really shows is that it really doesn't matter as long as the money is accepted by everybody and the exchange can take place. Everybody got their money's worth. The hotel owner got the bread, the baker got the dress, the dressmaker got the cloth, and so on and so right to the end where the traveling salesman got the room. And the $100 was gone. So this shows really that money is what it is good for and what it should be used for, and therefore we should create a money that is ideal for that. Bernard Lyotard, who is a colleague of mine who has talked about the interest system, written a very good book, The Future of Money. He talked to one of the top guys in the bank of the Daimler-Benz, of our biggest manufacturer in Germany. By the way, that's something I didn't say, that in Germany, basically all the big corporations are big banks with a small production front. They may make much more money out of the circulation of money than in their production. And when he talked to this top guy in the bank of Daimler-Benz in Germany, he asked him in which time spans he would think for the future of his children. And the man said, well, 20 to 30 years. And then he asked him, and how, in which time spans was he thinking when he came into his office in the morning? And he said, well, in time spans of 3 to 4 months. And he said, do you see, that is sort of illogical. It's totally schizophrenic what we're doing. In trying to build up wealth in an area where it actually doesn't belong, which is the money system, which is totally uncreative, instead of trying to build up wealth in culture and education and all the areas that really enrich our lives.
You have been listening to Dr. Margaret Kennedy speaking to Wings executive producer Frieda Worden on complementary currencies. Dr. Kennedy's book, Interest and Inflation-Free Money, is published by New Society Publishers. I'm Kelia Ramaris.
Our email is wings@wings.org. Website, www.wings.org. The Wings Sound logo is from Livana's album, A Circle Is Cast. Special thanks to Suzette Cullen and to Genevieve Vaughn, author of 36 Steps to a Gift Economy. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.